Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, June 12th. I'm Kai Wright, host of the WNYC podcast, The United States of Anxiety. I'm filling in for Brian today, who had to take the day off for dental work, but he will be back on Monday. We're going to check in on the process of reopening amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Many states across the country have lifted certain lockdown restrictions. With those restrictions lifted, an unwelcome surge of coronavirus cases have appeared in more than a dozen states. But governors of those states remain adamant about continuing with the reopening process. In Texas, where cases have increased by 33% in the past 2 weeks, Republican Governor Greg Abbott has given the green light for businesses to continue reopening nonetheless. And in Arizona, cases have doubled within the past 2 weeks, and they are nonetheless pushing ahead with hospitals at near full capacity. So the federal government seems to agree with them. Yesterday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin had this to say about reopening the economy amidst an increase in cases of coronavirus. Let's take a listen to that.
We can't shut down the economy again. I think we've learned that if you shut down the economy, you're going to create more damage, and not just economic damage, but there are other areas. And we've talked about this, of medical problems and everything else that get put on hold.
Joining me now to discuss where the spikes in COVID cases are happening and what the government can do about it is Alice Miranda Olstein, who is healthcare reporter for Politico. Welcome to WNYC, Alice.
Thank you so much.
Alice, the majority of states that are continuing to reopen despite this spike in numbers have Republican governors in charge. And so I guess it begs the question right away, is this yet another thing where the response to this COVID-19 will fall under partisan lines?
I think that's somewhat the case, but not always. And I think you're seeing differences within the party. As we've seen during this entire pandemic, you have Republican governors being very cautious. You have others barreling ahead with reopening, even as the spikes are continuing. And you have differences within Democratic state and local officials as well. And so it doesn't cleave along clean party lines in this case. And to Secretary Mnuchin's comment that you aired, I would say that there's been this effort to portray this as an all or nothing. Either you're for reinstating a full lockdown or you're for full reopening. And that's just absolutely not the case. And we're seeing right now some states saying, look, we need to at least hit pause and not further reopen, just stay where we are now in terms of our rules around businesses and social gatherings in light of the spikes.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of reminds me of this very old debate in public health about these all or nothing arguments. It seems like it has been part of a lot of this COVID-19 conversation, is, you know, even both in terms of how states respond and how governments respond, but also as individuals, people have either do everything or nothing to protect yourself. And I wonder what you think about how much of the lack of restriction that's coming along in these states can be attributed to just quarantine fatigue.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. And I also think that the economic pain people are feeling is real. So many people, millions and millions of people, have lost their jobs. The aid from Congress is running low. And for many people, it never arrived in the first place. And so I think that the push to reopen has some very legitimate bases, but the virus is still extremely prevalent. And as more people go out and as more people interact, especially in workplace settings and in businesses and in these sort of enclosed places, the risk is rising. And we're seeing cases rise and we're seeing hospitalizations go up. We're seeing ICU beds fill up in a lot of parts of the country. So there's really alarm bells going off.
Yeah. The protests around police violence were, I guess, either a really unpredictable or a really predictable part of all of this when we got into it. Is there any sense of a number of cases that might be linked to mass protests in some of these states?
So it's too soon to tell. So the spikes we're seeing right now can't be tied to the protests because it takes a few weeks to really see the impact from that. And so what we are seeing now can be more easily attributed to the reopenings and the people, just going out in public more, leaving their home more, interacting more. It will take time to see the impact of the protests. And so a lot of places and public officials and city officials are worried about that. And they have in New York and DC and in other cities, they've set up testing locations specifically for protesters and are posting on Twitter every single day pleading with people to go get tested. What's troubling is that so far, people aren't largely heeding those calls. There's a lot of unused testing capacity going on in these cities right now. It's a complete flip from the story of a few months ago when people were clamoring to get tested and there were these shortages and federal missteps in distributing all of the necessary kits and materials, and it was very hard to get a test. Now it's not very hard to get a test, and people don't know that a lot of the time, or they think they can only get one if they're severely sick. And so you're seeing a lot of testing capacity going unused, which is really troubling a lot of city officials.
Well, so is that what you would attribute it to? Is the fact that people just don't know? Is that, or is it, does it have something to do with the fact that people weren't, after the a few weeks of conflict in the streets with police and particularly protesters that may not see the government or a public good as someplace they would turn in this moment? Or is it just that lack of information? What would you attribute the fact that these testing centers are empty?
Well, they're not empty. For instance, in DC, there's been long lines at the free testing sites that just opened recently, but there is capacity going unused, which is of high concern because that means we're not finding out where the virus is in the community. We're not getting that info to the contact tracers so they can reach out and say, hey, you may have been exposed, you should get tested, et cetera. But I think it's a mixture of all of the things you mentioned. For months, people were told testing is limited. You have to be either very sick or have traveled internationally or have come into contact with someone who tested positive in order to qualify. Those restrictions aren't in place any longer, and that information has been hard to get to people. I think when the guidance has changed so many times over the past few months, people do get message fatigue as well as you mentioned quarantine fatigue. But, just hearing these different conflicting messages coming from the government is troubling. Meanwhile, you have states reopening. You have President Trump going out and saying this is largely behind us. And that also sends the message that people don't need to be on high alert and maybe don't need to take some of these precautions, including getting tested.
Well, and I mean, you write in your article that there's a belief that as long as states continue to expand the testing parameters, that reopening procedures can just proceed. Is that true? Is that the right way to understand it?
So, a lot of governors have tried to argue and have echoed President Trump's arguments that the rise in cases we're seeing now is solely attributed to a rise in testing. The more you test, the more you find. That is misleading. Of course, the more you test, the more you find, but also, whether you test or not, the virus is spreading. And the rise in hospitalizations and people in the ICU cannot just be attributed to more testing. This is more people who are sick than were before.
And so, who's in charge of ensuring that governors reimpose restrictions if things get out of hand? You mentioned Dr. Anthony Fauci, that he suggested this was, I guess, back in April, that you may need to reimpose restrictions if the virus rebounds. Is there any federal fail-safe for that? How does that happen if governors don't?
Well, as we've seen throughout this whole pandemic, the federal administration has largely left most decisions and responsibilities up to the states, really sort of passed the buck there. And so we are seeing a patchwork, just like we've seen throughout this entire year in how they respond. And I think it'll come down to how bad the virus outbreak gets in that particular state, what kind of public pressure there is on either side. And so you are seeing states make very different decisions, as we've seen all year long.
And Alice, we talked about sort of the mixed messaging or the messaging fatigue on testing. What about on the precautions we're supposed to take in terms of wearing face masks, washing our hands for 20 seconds? Is that getting out? Are people doing that even though, even as people start to move around in society again?
I think there's a lot of concern about mixed messages around that. And I think there has been sort of a misunderstanding of how science works, essentially. So this is a new virus. We're learning things about it all of the time. That's going to mean the guidance changes. But when people hear a few months ago, don't wear a mask, or you don't need to, or it doesn't help, and now they hear, no, you really should, they then think of that guidance as not trustworthy. But that's how science works. It evolves. We learn new things and we update based on that. And so I think that's been a real concern to people. And when you have political leaders not emphasizing mask wearing or not wearing a mask at their events, there's been a lot of attention on President Trump, but he's not the only one, of course. Mm-hmm. That really gives people an inaccurate impression of what they should do to protect themselves. I think that recently there was a whole kerfluffle around the World Health Organization saying different guidance about how the virus can be transmitted by people who don't have symptoms, whether that's happening or not, that they had to then walk back. But people don't always hear the walk back or the correction after a piece of misinformation goes out. It's a constant problem.
I wonder also about guidance on how to wear a mask. I mean, I noticed here in my neighborhood in New York that there's so many people wearing masks on their chins as opposed to on their
oh,
faces.
God.
People joke about this. I mean, it really, in terms of thinking about how you communicate about that, are you hearing, as people start to move around more in these states, are you hearing guidance on exactly when and how you're supposed to do it? I guess, because there is a thought that, well, when you're outside, you're fine, but when you go inside, you have to have it on your face. How are public health and governors communicating about this in states that are reopening?
Well, a lot of them aren't communicating enough about it, but you're right. There needs to be clear, consistent, and repeated messaging from trusted officials. This is another issue that folks have been raising. When the people communicating this guidance on public health are political officials, that reduces some people's trust based on how they feel about that political official. So it really helps to have scientific and medical experts out there hammering these points, like, you know, your mask should cover your nose and your mouth, for instance. But this is absolutely an issue. But I think people need to remember that just because guidance changes doesn't mean that you should just throw up your hands and say, oh, well, they're clearly all liars or full of it.
Yeah. Let's hear from a caller, Anne Marie in Phoenix, Arizona. Anne Marie, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Kai. Yeah. So I'm a native New Yorker, and I moved out here to what we call the Valley a year ago after meeting my partner from Phoenix. Now, I still have a home on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and I now live and work out here in Phoenix, have been coming here for a while. So my experience, of course, being a New Yorker, I've watched extremely carefully as the pandemic has unfolded in New York and basically flattened our people and our healthcare system. Here in Phoenix, this is a very blue city in an increasingly purple state. Phoenix is the fastest growing city in the country. A lot of the folks moving here are not your standard red state, Arizonans of yore. However, to the point that you're all making about masks, this is probably the biggest thing that could change for the better here. In my opinion, there's a needlessly politicized viewpoint on the part of a lot of residents around masks. They're not wearing them. There's some occasional heckling of those of us who do.
Really?
Being a New Yorker, I have my response at the ready for that, of course. So that is probably the single greatest personal behavioral step that residents here could take. I want to go back to the point that your guest made about how the testing isn't the only reason cases are going up. Testing was not available very quickly here, but now the percentage of tests that are being done that are coming out positive is in the range of 12%, whereas about a month ago was about 5% of people were testing positive. So to her point that it's not just the testing that's causing the increase, it's community transmission. So to wrap it up, I would say, you know, politically, this is a different environment than New York. There is more of an emphasis on balance between public health and economy. I would say maybe here the needle goes a little more to the economy. The public health aspect of wearing a mask and perhaps making it mandatory is something that I would think very important compared to New York. And
can I ask
and of
you,
course,
Anne-Marie,
now having sure.
Can I ask you? But you mentioned this point of conflict about masks. I just want to hear a little more about that. So you're saying that on the street amongst individuals, the choice to wear or not wear a mask is becoming a political statement that people engage around with each other. It becomes a point of argument.
Yes. And I would qualify that statement by saying that that is my observation and opinion, but it's actually been written about how that the mask has become a symbol of snowflakes and you know, people who think that this is too overblown, that this is really just a mild flu. It has been needlessly politicized, and that's been discussed in our press here. And you can tell when people gently heckle you or not so gently heckle you in supermarkets or other places that you've re-entered, that there is this attitude. And people actually, I've had colleagues report that in situations in, say, supermarkets where people aren't wearing masks, those same individuals will tend to sort of aggressively come into their personal space, certainly much closer than 6 feet. And we were joking just yesterday in a Zoom call about how these behaviors, no mask, and then incursion into your personal space tend to correlate. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that, Anne-Marie. Denise in South Orange, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to chime in with the information regarding South Carolina. I travel between New Jersey and South Carolina. I still have family in South Carolina, and I got a text yesterday from my daughter indicating that the number of cases and the number of cases in the hospital have doubled. They doubled yesterday. And I kept telling them that it was coming, but I do think the mindset of the southern states is that it wasn't coming, and it's a red state. But my problem or issue is that in these rural communities, they're not going to be able to have the PPEs and the equipment to sustain the increased use of ICUs. There's hospitals that have closed, and I think, unfortunately, that's going to be a red herring for those governments and government officials when this all comes down, because they have dine-in. You can dine in now on a limited basis. The malls are open. Some of the employers are back. So it's not people are going to the beach. So unfortunately, this is a very troubling, troubling sign.
Thank you for that, Denise. Alice, I wonder, too, when we think about some of the rural areas, some of the southern states, some of the places that haven't had as big of a hit to the healthcare system as we've had in places like New York, if there is another spike as we start to see these spikes, well, the spikes are happening, but if they start to see the hospitalizations and the need for ventilators and PPEs and all of that, is there any indication that those places are better prepared now in the sense of that they've had time at least to stock up, to staff up? Is there any indication that they're that they're ready?
So to the caller's point, it's something that's of very high concern because, yes, New York's health system was swamped in for months during the pandemic because of the high population and how bad the virus was. But these other communities that have much smaller populations, they also have much smaller health systems. And there's been just a wave of rural hospital closures that predates the pandemic, of course, especially in states that didn't expand Medicaid. And so you have a lot of communities that have no local hospital at all and have to drive a ways to get to one. And so those health systems definitely could be at risk of being overwhelmed if states don't do more to get the virus under control. Of course, the time lag has allowed them to better prepare, but if there's no hospital at all in the community, there's not much you can do.
How does, you mentioned Medicaid expansion, how Yes. does that play into this? Because there is a bit of an overlap here between some of the states that are reopening, particularly the ones that are led by Republican governors, and the states that did not expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Is that relevant? How is that relevant?
I think it's going to be a really interesting debate in the months to come, because basically both sides have been could cite different things to bolster their arguments. The people who are for Medicaid expansion could say, look, our rural hospitals are struggling and this would be a huge infusion of resources if we expanded Medicaid and got that federal funding. They also will point to, look, we have tens of millions of people who are newly unemployed and need insurance. We don't want them all to go uninsured in the middle of a pandemic. That would be horrendous. So we should expand Medicaid to bring some of those on the rolls. On the other side, you have people saying states are taking a huge economic hit right now. Tax revenues are plummeting. They are having to spend so much more. We can't afford to do Medicaid expansion. And so I think you're going to see that fierce debate play out in the months to come.
As far as I know, the only governor who has slowed down the reopening process is Gary Herbert, governor of Utah. Is that correct? And how are people reacting in Utah, and particularly the small businesses? How are they reacting to that?
So last night, also Oregon announced that they would be pausing as well. And a few cities seem to be considering it. You have Nashville talking about it. You have Houston talking about it. And so there are some states and individual cities that are saying, look, in light of these spikes, we do at least need to hit pause, if not consider reimposing some restrictions. But that is largely the exception. Largely, we have most of the country moving towards reopening right now.
And so then how do you expect them, some of those other places, to react when things start to go south? I mean, the health secretary of Tennessee, Lisa Piercy, she says that they might be introducing restrictions with, quote, a more laser focus. What exactly does that mean? So when they start, when they put in new restrictions, what kind of new restrictions are we talking about?
So there's been a lot of talk of these, yes, more targeted restrictions and especially more geographically targeted. So if a particular county is having a spike or becoming a hotspot, they say, oh, well, we don't want to punish the whole state for that and impose things on the entire state. The problem is that people travel. So if you have strict restrictions in one part of a state and not in another, people move back and forth. That's obviously an issue between states as well. I mean, in the New York area, people travel across state lines every single day by the millions. And so right. I think that given the lack of federal guidance and leadership, we are seeing this patchwork, and there are real downsides to every separate area of the country making its own decisions and doing its own thing, given that we are so interconnected.
Yeah, it's an overwhelming thing to think about what the solution will be if we start to see these outbreaks. So New York City, we've just entered phase one of reopening. New Jersey is targeting phase two next week. What can we here expect going forward, especially taking into account what we're seeing elsewhere, that these news cases are going to surface inevitably as we reopen the economy? What would you say to us here about what we can expect to see?
Well, of course, it's hard to predict, but New York has done a really good job in bringing down, in massively expanding testing. Testing is at record levels right now, but also in bringing down the percentage of people who are testing, who test positive. To the previous caller's point, you have some states where the percent who test positive are in the double digits, and that's very concerning. That means you're not testing enough. You're not finding where the virus is. In New York, it's way, way down. It's below 2%. I think it's below 1.5% currently. So that is a very good sign. But I also think that because New York was hit so hard earlier on, you have so many more people who have had it already in other states where that's not the case, that means you have all of these people who have not yet been exposed, who could be newly exposed now that everybody's leaving their house and resuming normal business and going around again. And so it's, I mean, it's sort of which difficult situation would you prefer?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will leave it there for today. My guest has been Alice Miranda Olstein, who is the healthcare reporter for Politico. Alice, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.